This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
We just heard 17-year-old percussionist Campbell Stewart from Tucson, Arizona, perform the finale of Johann Sebastian Bach's Violin Sonata No. 2 in A minor on the marimba. Welcome to From the Top, where outstanding young musicians come to play. I'm your host, pianist Peter Dugan. Happy to be here with you today to consider some examples of the sonata, a term that has been used to describe pieces as far back as the 16th century and has accrued many definitions relative to form, period, and structure. But the word sonata comes from the Italian sonare, to sound, which in music literally means a piece that is played, as opposed to a cantata from cantare, which means to sing. The piece we just heard was composed in the style of a Baroque church sonata, or sonata da chiesa, but Bach likely intended it as a virtuosic concert piece. So if Bach were around today, I don't think he would find it sacrilegious to perform it on the marimba. Now let's meet 17-year-old percussionist Campbell Stewart. Campbell, hey, welcome to From the Top. Great to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
Somewhere Bach is smiling, for sure. Wow, it was just beautiful. I love your phrasing, and you play it so intelligently. I can hear the architecture of the piece, but at the same time, it's got a lot of heart in it.
Thank you.
What drew you to this piece?
I listened to Hilary Hahn's recording of this, and I was with my principal, who also used to be a violinist. He would tour and play with orchestras.
The principal of your school?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is it a music school or art school?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
It's wow, just that's cool.
Coincidence.
Uh-huh.
He recommended this recording to me, and it was the Bach Violin Sonata 2, and he was kind of just like sitting there smiling while I listened to it, and I really liked it.
Mm. Nice. So talk to me a little bit about Bach on the marimba.
Well, a lot of the repertoire for percussion is not as beautiful as Bach's compositions.
Hmm.
It's a lot of just banging on stuff. So to be able to take something that a cello or a violin plays and be able to translate that onto percussion, I think shows a lot of your capabilities to phrase music.
Right,
and kind
right.
of tell a story.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering if you can just humor me and just to play a little bit. Could I hear what it would sound like to hear a little bit of that piece played like absolutely metronomically? I'm just curious what that would sound like so that our listeners can realize how free and fluid your performance really was.
Yeah.
Right. And suddenly it starts to feel like math. And
yeah.
of course, that's not at all what it really is. There's so much heart to it. Being a percussionist, is this an ongoing tension to kind of that balance between a rhythmic instrument versus a lyrical instrument?
It depends what percussive instrument you're playing. I didn't start on drum set like a lot of other kids.
Mm-hmm.
I actually began on the piano when I was 5 or 6 years old. So this was kind of how I learned music compared to someone who just was like...
Interesting. Yeah. was it marimba first for you? Was that your first entry into the world of percussion?
Yes. I played in like a little marimba ensemble when I was a kid.
So talk to me about the vast array of instruments that are in your wheelhouse.
Oh, I have the marimba, and then I have a snare drum. I just bought a drum set, and there's vibes, there's triangle, like all the orchestra stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I try to keep it kind of well-balanced of what I practice.
How does a practice routine look for you on day-to-day?
Right now, it's very scheduled out because I'm getting ready for college auditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually do like an hour of keyboard instruments, an hour of snare drum, an hour of timpani.
Wow.
Jake Nisley in the San Francisco Orchestra, they call him the Tornado. And that kind of inspired me because he has all these instruments laid out and he just goes from place to place every like 5 minutes. So that's what I like to do.
How about your various challenges at each of these instruments? Is there anything that's consistent across all of them, or do they each have their own unique difficulties?
I think it separates from keyboard instruments and then like the snare drum, tambourine, triangle, and stuff like that.
Okay, so talk to me about them.
Well, the snare drum and the orchestra side of the family mm-hmm. is kind of more my struggles, at least, is just keeping time, just because I wasn't a drum set player to start.
Mm.
So that's always been hard for me, is like keeping a steady beat and using a metronome.
So is that the main way to practice that, is just with metronome?
Yeah, or I like to make practice tracks or find some that are already made.
What do you have to think about with how you use your body to be better at keeping time steadily?
You have to be very relaxed, is what I've found.
Relaxed.
Because tension is what kind of makes everything fall apart.
So interesting.
When I'm practicing, I'll be playing through a snare drum etude
mm-hmm.
and thinking about all the intricate rhythms or like my technique or how the rolls sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll listen back to a recording and it's like completely out of time because that's not what I was focusing on.
Does phrasing and lyricism in any way enter into the way you play a snare drum solo?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're still just accompanying every other instrument and they're all phrasing. So you kind of have to do the same thing.
So that must mean dynamics. Is playing loud hard?
It can be.
It can be?
Yeah.
Because you have to stay loose even as you do it. What about playing soft?
Soft is what is tricky sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Because in like a performance setting, when the nerves kick in and you're standing with your hands close to the snare drum and they're just shaking, it's very easy to make little buzzing sounds.
Would you say you enjoy playing solo Bach on the marimba like you did just now the most, or do you prefer that kind of orchestral experience.
I don't think I prefer one over the other. I mean, the problem with me is I'm so used to just reading rhythms, like learning notes takes a little longer than a pianist. But I've gotten a lot better at it, but that was kind of what held me back for a while.
What are some of your favorite musical moments?
I remember one very powerful moment was at Brevard Music Center the summer of my sophomore year. It was like a huge outdoor hall, sold out, ton of people. And it was like my first big timpani part ever, like playing with an orchestra.
What was the piece?
It was 1812 Overture.
Ooh, nice one.
And they hadn't told us, but they were doing like the cannonball firings at the end of the piece. I was playing like the last super big notes on the timpani and they just started firing off cannons. And it was so loud and it just sent like goosebumps. And I looked out into the audience. So I was like, wow, this is it.
Yeah. Must have been thrilling to be part of that. I want to hear a little bit about how you envision your career unfolding at this point. You're 17 years old.
Well, right now I'm auditioning to music schools.
Nice.
I definitely want to be in the orchestra setting. I also love teaching. I had some little drum set students for a while.
That's cool.
I kind of like the idea of just being able to do everything, freelance, orchestra, teach.
Well, it sounds like you're on the right path to achieving that. When you brought the marimba into the studio today, there was a lot of lifting going on. Yeah. But I have to say, you seemed awfully comfortable doing it. Is that a coincidence?
No. I do like weightlifting a lot in my free time. It started my freshman year when I joined the football team. I loved the weightlifting and the practices, but once I like got to the game, I just did not have fun.
Interesting. So what are you most proud of in terms of what you've done in the weight room?
Well, during the times when I was very like focused in the weight room, I got my numbers up pretty high.
Do you want to brag about that a little bit or?
I'll brag. So I hit 515 on deadlift.
What?
Yeah. And then I hit 465 on squat and 280 on bench.
Oh my God. Well, I promise the reason why I complimented your performance was not because I was afraid of you beating me up, but now I am. That's super impressive. And obviously, like, it's about discipline, it's about setting goals and following through. Yeah. I admire that a lot. Campbell, again, I'm so impressed by your Bach, the fluid phrasing, the clear structure. It was such a great performance. Thank you for being with us and thanks for taking the time to chat.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Campbell Stewart, 17-year-old percussionist from Tucson, Arizona. As a pianist, one of my favorite ways to think about the sonata is as a medium for collaboration, in which the piano and another instrument come together as equals. One of the most rewarding parts of my work on From the Top is the musical dialogue I get to have with many of our gifted young players. I'm always impressed by their maturity and ability to really listen and respond. At the heart of the sonata is this idea of give and take, leading and following, that can only happen when both players are present in the moment and open to the adventure of the improvisation. Listening to each other is an essential part of this equation. Speaking of exciting collaborations, let's now meet 17-year-old cellist Hannah Jung from College Station, Texas. She and I will perform the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth Sonata for piano and cello. Hey, Hannah.
Hi.
Welcome to From the Top.
I'm so excited to be here.
I can't wait to play with you. Are you ready to take it from...
From the top?
From the top.
From the top.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Thank you. 17-year-old cellist Hannah Jung from College Station, Texas, performed the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth Cello Sonata with me, Peter Dugan, on the piano.
Hey, that was gorgeous, Hannah.
Thank you.
It was so much fun to play with you. That's a really sophisticated piece of music from the late period of Beethoven.
Yeah.
It's so complex, and you play with such maturity. I just really appreciate your sense of time, your sense of pacing.
Thank you.
One of the things that makes you a great collaborator is your ability to listen. What brings you joy when it comes to collaboration?
Actually, collaborating with musicians is probably what made me love music and what got me really into it. I think it's just so special that we can make magic with other people and we can connect through our same love for music. My first summer camp that I went to was a chamber festival, and I just remember I got to play in a string quartet for the first time, and I realized like how much joy that music can bring with people and how much power we can create.
For sure.
I imagine that my fingers are coordinated with the people I'm playing with. Like, the same moment that my finger taps my fingerboard is like the same moment you press a key on a piano.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of coordination is, I think, what makes everything really cohesive in chamber music.
Yeah, yeah. It's like imagining that our fingers are connected by zero latency Wi-Fi. Is there a moment in this piece that is particularly exciting for you mm-hmm. to play?
I think the very ending,
mm-hmm.
because we're totally in sync with all the 16th notes, and then we just end the piece with three big chords. It's a bang of an ending. Like, we just get to enjoy a bunch of coordination.
I'm wondering if we can play it one more time for our listeners so that they can hear the way Beethoven takes us from this sort of mysterious haze and then in the space of one measure
mm-hmm.
lets the sunshine
yeah.
come out. So can we just play that?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go from the pianissimo. Yeah, it's so brilliant. What are some other ways that you like to engage with music other than just performing?
One side hobby I have would be arranging and transcribing music. I do it specifically cool. for cello ensembles. I might be a little biased, but I think that's one of the coolest ensemble groups that can exist. I'm definitely biased. But yeah, so I'll just listen to random pieces and make it for like a cello quartet or sextet.
Cool. Is there an arrangement that you've done that you're particularly proud of?
This is not an arrangement, but it's a transcription of Another Day of Sun from La La Land. I was in a cello quartet at Metamount a few summers ago, and we got to play it at the talent show. It was just a very fun experience. Arranging and transcribing has helped me a lot in my own field of study. Like, when I look at a piece now, I think I look less at just my part, but think more about how it fits into a bigger picture.
Mm.
It's made me a lot more curious
mm-hmm.
to other things I can do in music, like studying different instruments or trying composing. Or even stuff that's like totally out of my comfort zone, like singing. Because I feel like all of those things help to make me a better cellist in the end.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes you a great role model for other musicians. Everyone should be thinking about how to expand their musical language and the breadth of their musicality. So do you come from a musical family, Hannah?
Partially. My mom was actually a music major when she was a student. And my brother grew up playing violin and piano. My dad doesn't have any musical relations, but he's always been very supportive.
And how did you come to the cello?
I wish it was more inspiring, but my dad walked out on the driveway of our house one day, and there was a newspaper, and there was this tiny article. It was written by my first ever cello teacher, and she was calling for young cellists to come join her studio. Before that, my mom had been thinking of getting me started on an instrument, so it all kind of came together.
That's really cool. Well,
yeah.
Good for her for putting the ad out and changing your life in the process of doing that. Finally, if your cello were a person, how would you describe them?
Well, I guess I should start by saying my cello's name is Cabbage. being on a plane ticket that we got to camp, it said CBBG and then my last name. So I thought it said Cabbage. Mm-hmm. So I just named it Cabbage. I personally don't like cabbage that much. And I'm not saying, no, oh my God. I think it goes off topic.
Great in stews. I think what you're telling me is your cabbage. Your cello goes great in stews.
But I think my cello is not the most conventional instrument. It's very old. So compared to a lot of the cellos I see my friends playing, I think it's not as good in terms of creating a larger sound. But what caught my attention was there was always a warmth to this cello. So I think it would maybe be a warm person, a little peculiar, but very kind-hearted, maybe not super extroverted, but always has something to say.
Mm.
So yeah, that is Cabbage.
That is Cabbage the cello.
Cabbage the cello.
Well, Hannah, thank you for introducing me to your cello, to Cabbage. Thank you just for being with us today. Your Beethoven was glorious, and I loved working with you.
All right, thank you.
17-year-old cellist Hannah Jung from College Station, Texas.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the Jack and Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need, jkcf.org. From BritBox, streaming the Agatha Christie collection, including series like Poirot, Why Didn't They Ask Evans?, and new original mystery, Murder is Easy. The Agatha Christie collection, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR. And from the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
We're back with 17-year-old violist Stephen Chang from Southlake, Texas. He and I are going to jump into our musical collaboration right now. So far, we've been hearing the exciting fast movements of sonatas. Now, let's enjoy one of the most gorgeous slow movements from the sonata literature. Stephen and I will perform the second movement of Brahms' Viola Sonata in F minor, Andante un poco adagio.
That was the second movement of Johannes Brahms' Viola Sonata in F minor, performed by 17-year-old Stephen Chang on the viola, with me, Peter Dugan, on the piano. Stephen, beautiful, beautiful performance.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything you brought to that piece.
Thank you.
And every time we get to come together with another musician, the hope is that we arrive at something greater than what either of us thought was possible coming into it. To kind of go on this journey with you in our rehearsal and then performing it was a real privilege for me.
Thank you so much.
Really, bravo. This movement is so beautiful and tender. What does it mean to you, Stephen?
There are a lot of second movements of sonatas that are very slow and they have this sort of sad emotion to it. But I think that this particular second movement has such like a level of intimacy. It has a very unique kind of sadness. It has kind of a layer of hope there as well. I think the word that actually comes to me when I think of this piece as a whole is nostalgia. It's like reminiscing on the good old days and also having some hope for the future as well.
I feel it when you play it. I feel the nostalgia. It's so Brahms. But the first three notes of the melody, like the descent, the falling, the sighing, it's hard to do, but you do it so well. This sonata was originally written for the clarinet. Any thoughts on that as a violist?
No offense to clarinetists, but personally, I do believe that the viola as an instrument, it can really help demonstrate the range. And also, vibrato is really, really nice on the viola.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Stephen, what does the word sonata mean to you?
To me, it's like a collaboration, kind of, because a sonata is, it is actually just a collaboration between a solo instrument and a piano. So it's not like a concerto where it's just one soloist and you're basically only focusing on that one person. It's not like the pianist is just accompanying. They're both equally putting their parts into the music.
I appreciate you taking that approach, and that's the way it should be. And I've felt that from you when you walked in the door. We had some fun kind of back and forth moments in our rehearsal process. Let our listeners in on the process of how we arrived ultimately at the collaboration that we did.
We had different ideas about like whether we should crescendo here, decrescendo thing, and how long a certain phrase should be, either 2 bars, 4 bars. But I think we knew what we did want.
Right.
We were able to kind of make a compromise and then come to this interpretation.
Yeah, beautifully said. It was really a delight to play with you. Do you come from a musical family, Stephen?
I do, yes. My mom majored in music and she sings a lot. Me and my brother and my sister, ever since we were all like babies, we just were surrounded by music essentially all the time because my mom sang to us. We went to church and we heard songs all the time. And we started really early on the piano. Everyone in our family has their kind of different musical talent-ish thing about them. Like some of us sing, some of us do string instruments. So.
And you started on piano. How did you end up with the viola in your hands?
That's a great question. Basically, it was pure pressure because my friends, they had already been playing string instruments and I wanted to join the orchestra that they were in. So I started playing the violin, but turns out that the orchestra had all the violin spots taken. So I switched to the viola. I got into the orchestra and I've just been playing the viola ever since.
Beautiful. Was there a particular moment or a particular piece that you played when you're like, I'm a violist now?
The first piece I played that I was like, I'm a violist now, was the Hummel Fantasy. And I get nostalgic kind of just thinking about that one.
Yeah, it's a great piece. What are some of the musical experiences you've had or performances you've had that you're most proud of?
Playing the Paganini Grand Sonata, mainly because it's just such a hard piece, I didn't think I could pull it off.
Did he write that for viola?
He did. It's like his only piece that he wrote for the viola. It is insanely difficult. And it was my first recital actually playing in front of an audience. It was my first actual performance.
Whoa.
And the fact that I actually pulled it off decently well and better than I expected, it makes it probably my biggest accomplishment.
Nice. Well, it's something to be proud of for sure. What are other ways that you engage with music besides playing the viola?
I love singing in the car.
Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Paint that picture for me.
So outside of classical music, I only listen to one genre, Korean music. Even though I can't really understand all of Korean, I for some reason, only listen to songs that are either in Korean or written by Korean artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I'm in the car, I just shuffle my karaoke K-pop playlist and then start screaming.
Nice. Can you give us a little taste of what that sounds like?
No, maybe if there's a backing track.
Well, I mean, I'm right here at the piano. I might know a K-pop song. What's one that I might know?
How about Gangnam Style by Psy?
Oh, I actually do know that song. All right, let's do a little from the top karaoke K-pop style moment.
Oppa Gangnam Style. Something like that.
Yes.
I apologize for my inconsistent Korean pronunciation, but
that's hilarious. Man, you've got something there. So when you go and do karaoke, like, how does that go down?
So the only time I've actually been to like a karaoke place is never, because our family just has a karaoke machine.
So you do it at home.
Yeah, so I have done it at home. But I do plan on going to one for my birthday
nice.
This year.
Nice, you should.
So I'm excited for that.
What's something you do outside of music that's important for you?
Speech and debate.
Okay.
It's an activity that I've been doing starting from my freshman year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it has led me through the greatest personal development of my life. And that's mainly because of the social aspect of it. Because before I did speech and debate, I was the most introverted introvert to ever exist. I did not know how to like talk to people at all. The people in the speech and debate community have actually been really welcoming, and they encouraged me to talk to them, and that was really nice. And then the activity itself is just so helpful, because when you go to tournaments, you have to be able to give speeches under pressured conditions with limited amount of preparation. So you just have to talk. And when I first started, I was completely unable to do so. But now that I've been doing it for like 4 years, I've gotten way better at talking.
Yeah, you're beautifully articulate and eloquent. Clearly it's working. Has speech and debate informed your musical life in any way?
I would say it definitely has, because just being able to socialize and communicate my thoughts to other people is extremely important in the musical world as well. And so it has helped me make a lot of musician friends.
That's beautiful. How would you describe your viola if it were a person?
Kind of shy, honestly, is one of the words that comes to me. Because when I play it, it has an amount of resistance, kind of like it doesn't want to project its sound that well. So you have to really know how to communicate with this instrument. Like shy people, you have to be able to know what they like. And so in order to talk with a shy person, usually has to be about something they're interested in. Yeah. And then when you actually do start playing it, it can create a really beautiful sound. So how to describe that as a person? A beautiful person, perhaps?
Yeah, a beautiful, maybe shy person who, once you get to know them, they have a lot to say. Sounds a little bit like Stephen Chang. I mean, you were slightly shy when we first met, but man, we've really gotten to know each other and gotten to play together and create together, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Stephen, thank you for being with us. Thanks for playing that Brahms with me.
Thank you so much.
Stephen Chang, 17 years old, from Southlake, Texas. Are you craving more From the Top? We've got you covered. Listen to extended interviews on the From the Top podcast. Watch exceptional musical performances on From the Top Daily Joy videos. And discover opportunities to meet From the Top in person. Find this and more on our website. Visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from The Station.
and from the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism, offering visitors information about the arts, culture, and history of Boston. The journey begins at visitma.com. From BritBox, with the goal of helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original series Archie, The Man Who Became Cary Grant, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.